Hi, I'm Michelle from YFS, and thanks for joining us for our podcast series on stuff you need to know about the law. Today, joining me in the studio is Vi and Mel from the YFS Legal Service. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you.
I'm good. All right. Focusing on family law today, we're going to have a chat about property settlement. Who's going to start? What is property settlement and why should we be talking about it?
Okay, so property settlement is the way that parties, when they separate, so de facto parties or married couples, will separate their assets, the money part of the relationship, things like houses, cars, superannuation, all of that financial stuff. So what the law wants you to do is to, once you separate, to financially remove yourselves from each other's lives, untangle all of those financial things you've spent years and years tangling up, untangle those and move forward. So the legislation gives us steps to follow. So there are, it's a four-step process, so I can go through those with you. And then you have to come to some sort of agreement, or you have to head off to court to, to fight it out.
And I imagine that particularly if you're having to access private lawyers, that court process could be quite expensive.
That court process is usually very expensive, especially in financial matters. You can, especially if you're doing financial matters, ask a private solicitor to do some do some work on what's called deferred fees. So they'll hold on to all their fees and then they'll charge you all the way at the end once you've gotten the property settlement money. But you do need to expect, if you're going to litigate property settlement matter all the way to final hearing, you're looking at about $50,000 for your solicitor.
Okay.
So you need to make sure you've got more than that each for your solicitors in your property pool before you go and do that. So sometimes it's better just to come to an agreement, even if you're not 100% happy with it, so you don't waste money on lawyers.
So what are the four steps?
Okay, first step is assessing the assets and liabilities. So in that process, I usually start with a list or a table where you write down all of the assets in your relationship, who owns them, they own in one person's name solely or are they owned jointly, and an estimate of how much they're worth. And you do the same thing with all your liabilities. So assets, things people always think of, house, your car, things you don't necessarily think of, your superannuation, the money in your bank right now, shares, interest in businesses, all of those things are assets.
Okay.
And then you've got your liabilities, your mortgage, your loans, your credit cards, any kind of tax debt you have, debts from the business, all of those things are liabilities.
All right.
So you make yourself a big list. And in this process, you have to go through a process called disclosure. So that means each of you have to exchange with the other one your financial details. So that's everything financial, all of your bank account details, statements, credit card statements, mortgage statements, tax returns, pay slips, anything you can possibly think of that has to do with your finances has to be disclosed to the other party, and likewise then with you. And you are obligated under legislation to do that. If you refuse to do that, the court will make an order for you to do it, but you're already obliged to do it.
Okay. Now, this doesn't just apply to couples who have been married.
No, it does not.
Okay.
So, so even de facto relationships will apply. This situation applies as well. Doesn't matter what kind of relationship you've been in. If there's any kind of financial entanglement, you're going to need to do a property settlement. So after you've done that first step of assessing the assets and liabilities, you then have to assess the contributions. So that's really hard.
Yeah,
and there are lots and
complex.
Lots of different, well, there were three major three major categories of contributions. So there are financial contributions. So that's anything you financially contributed to the relationship or anyone on your side of the family. So if your parents have given you $100,000 to go towards a mortgage, that's your contribution. If you've won lotto, same inheritance.
And that happens, the lotto. I'm like, you know, you see that in the paper, right?
Yep. All the time. Just after they separated, someone wins the lotto and then it has to get pulled into this property settlement. The other kind of contributions are non-financial contributions. So those are things that boost the asset pool that you might have paid somebody else to do, but you've done them instead. So if you're a carpenter and you've built the back deck, that's a non-financial contribution because otherwise you would have paid someone else to do it.
Of course.
And it's boosted the property value. The last category that we mostly talk about is contributions as a parent or a homemaker. So that's someone who's stayed home with the kids, done the majority of the housework and all that emotional labour that's sometimes just ascribed to wives, but it doesn't matter who you are in the relationship. You may be that main person who does that. So we assess all of those things in a rough estimate, in a percentage. So we're not going to count every dollar. We're going to go, did you earn more money during the relationship or did I? Did I do more of the non-financial contributions or did you? Did you do more of the parenting and homemaking or did I? They're just rough estimates. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, sometimes we do have to consider wastage as well. So if one person's sitting in the house, letting it run into ruin to make sure that it's worth nothing, we consider that's a negative contribution or a waste contribution.
That makes sense.
We don't often have to talk about that one, but sometimes we do. Mm-hmm. So that's step two.
Yeah, wow.
Step three is adjusting for future needs. So that's where we have to look at like a slider. We've got all of these contributions. We've got, you know, percentages in there. Mm-hmm. And then we have to slide that slider towards and away from one person or the other, depending on what's going to happen in the future.
Okay.
So we're looking at who has more care of the children. So they're going to need more of the property pool to support themselves and the children. Does someone have a disability that means they can't work? Has someone given up work to look after the kids so they need to retrain?
Yeah.
We have to think about all these things and adjust that slider in there as well. Mm-hmm. And then the last step is a stupid name. It's called the just and equitable step.
So
it's obviously a court term.
Yep.
But what that means is we want to make sure that if you're getting 50% of the property pool, that what constitutes that 50% of the property pool is just. We don't want someone walking away with the house and the money and someone walking away with $3 million in superannuation. Yeah. They're not going to be able to access for 17 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So we want to make sure that we've got something to support ourselves now and something into the future.
Yeah. It sounds like I imagine it would be quite an emotional process for people when you're breaking down a relationship into percentages and contributions.
Yeah, and its component parts. It takes all of that emotional everything out of your relationship. It can be very emotional for people. Wow. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the part people prefer to deal with because dealing with the children has so much more emotion attached to it.
Yep.
But that's not to say this part is not emotional and people don't get quite involved in it and angry about it.
Yep.
But then once you've done all of those things and you've come to an agreement, hopefully, in your best interest, so you don't, you're not giving away 100 grand to lawyers. You've come to an agreement, now you have to formalise it. And it's a really important step because unfortunately we have seen previously where people have come to an agreement, they've acted on that agreement, and then one party has gone to court and said, I want a financial settlement now, and has come back for a second bite. Because it's not been formalised, there's nothing in writing. So you do need to formalise it so that there is something that is enforceable. So the two main ways that you formalise a property settlement is through a consent order.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you're in agreement, or through a binding financial agreement.
Okay.
Now, a binding financial agreement is a contract between the two parties. It doesn't go to court. Okay. Each of you will need to hire private lawyers that are separate from each other, and they are going to be very expensive. They each have to give you independent legal advice. One party has to draft the agreement. The other party has to agree to it. As soon as it's signed by both parties, it's enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have entered into that agreement and you no longer like it, or one party says that perhaps another party pressured them into making it, they can go back to court and have to start the whole property settlement procedure again. So if you enter into a binding financial agreement, you do have to do so caution.
Yeah, okay.
And you must have that legal advice, otherwise it's not enforceable and you will have to go to court.
Yeah.
So I usually recommend people enter into a consent order. Number one, it's 100% cheaper.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you $165 to file it. You don't have to get legal advice if you don't want. I recommend you do, but you don't have to.
Yes.
And you can write, you can just fill out the application for consent orders yourself, fill out the form for the minutes of consent you want the court to make, send that off, and in 6 weeks, if it's just and equitable, the court will stamp it, send it back, and it's enforceable.
Okay.
Now, the last thing, Vice just reminded me, and I wish she just jumped in and said it, is that there is a time limitation.
Okay,
so when we're looking at a property settlement,
yes.
you must complete that property settlement or file in court within 2 years of separation if you were in a de facto relationship. If you are married, your time doesn't start until your divorce is finalised. So once you've applied for divorce, you've gone through the procedure, you've been in court, and they've given you your divorce order, which is a month and a day after they've done the court hearing.
Mm-hmm.
12 months after that, you have to have either finished your property settlement and filed something or have filed in court.
Okay.
If you don't comply with those time limitations, then you will have to ask the court's permission to be able to file for any kind of consent or any kind of proceedings in court unless you're married. You were married. If you were married and divorced,
yes.
by agreement, you can overcome that time limitation. But usually one person won't want to.
No. Okay. It sounds, you know, like when you think, okay, let's just get a property settlement and do it, it actually sounds like quite a process.
It is. It's a massive process. Mm-hmm. And it's not one I would recommend anyone do without legal advice.
Yep.
You're probably going to need a couple of sessions of advice. Mm-hmm. So that can be through a community legal centre who can offer you free advice.
Mm-hmm.
You can contact Legal Aid. They're not usually so good at giving property advice. They normally stick to children. They don't fund property settlements usually.
Yep.
They can in certain circumstances, but not usually.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, a private solicitor. But you do have to be able to pay for that because a property settlement will need several advice sessions at least.
Okay. And I know that in a previous podcast, we've talked about mediation and mediation can form part of that process for property settlement as well.
Absolutely. Yep. You can attend a mediation for property settlement. And if you've just got some really small issues, mm-hmm. even if you've got some really big ones, a mediation can help you to resolve those and come to a good agreement. No one wins 100% in these things. You just have to come up with an agreement you can live with.
Yeah. Okay. So if people are wanting further information or wanting to access some legal advice or kind of get an idea of the steps in the process that they need to complete, the YFS website, www.yfs.org.au, or call 3826 1500. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.